welcome to iDeveloper Live. For the very first time, we are going off our own live audio streaming server, which we have spent months and months and months testing and honing. And in fact, I think Rob set it up the other night and we put about 10 seconds through it and said, that's good enough. But anyway, we're having a go and we're in Convor for our new chat room. So we're going to see. But the good thing is, it doesn't matter how well this goes today. We can all celebrate because there is no flash involved at all.
Woo-hoo!
I'm just going to leave the moment for everyone to celebrate. And there are no ads involved in the stream. I mean, it could be as bad as ever and it's not going to be worse than we've done before. So anyway, John was so excited by this that he actually has failed to turn up because he's on an aeroplane. I think it's a poor excuse not being able to broadcast live for an aeroplane. But there we go. But we do have a great guest with us today, Mr. Michael Simmons. How are you doing, Michael?
Very well, Scotty. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Thank you very much for turning up. Thank you very much for being prepared to be part of our great technology experiment. So tell us who you are, Michael.
So I'm Michael Simmons. I'm the co-founder of Flexibits. We have an application we released a couple months ago called Fantastical. And our goal with Flexibits is to do software for the Mac, and we'll have some iOS stuff coming in the future that will really be different. We don't want to just do the same stuff over and over again. We're looking to really make software that's going to stand out and make the platforms better.
Okay, so I mean, this is a new app. Is this your first app as a company?
As Flexibits, it's actually technically our second app. About a year or so ago, we released an app called Cameras. And Cameras was a preference pane that allowed you to decide what would happen when you'd plug in multiple cameras. And that actually went really well. We ended up killing that product, if you will, when Snow Leopard came out. As you probably know, image capture allowed you to define a per-device basis. And we originally released our app not knowing that Snow Leopard would have this functionality. And once it came out, we just didn't feel right about selling it. So we ended up making the software free. We actually refunded all customers' money. We just felt it was the right thing to do. And that was sort of the end of Cameras. But people still ask for it and download it, which is pretty incredible.
But that means, so you were Sherlock's, but you made the world right. I bet you felt pretty bad after all that, though, didn't you?
Sort of. I mean, we did this product because we wanted it. One of the key tenets of what I do with software is I want a product that I want. I want a solution that doesn't exist. I want to make something better. And by having that product ultimately in Snow Leopard, it was a pain because we did all this work and everything, but it was good that at least the product was there. It was an interesting feeling, but on the right side of things, we felt like giving the refund and making it free and not taking advantage of customers let us realize that at least we can run a company where we respect and value our customers, and that was a good experience.
Now, talking of a new OS, just sort of overriding something you've been working on, a certain sort of OS named after a certain king of the jungle has recently gone into a certain state that has the letters G and M in it recently. But we're fairly confident that Fantastical is safe.
Yeah, and I mean, even though we are under NDA and we can't talk about stuff, I can tell you this openly. We are going to support the latest operating system. Apple's announced Lion, of course, at WWDC and press releases. There were definitely announcements about Lion, so we can tell you that that is an upcoming operating system, and we can tell you that we'll definitely be supporting it when it comes out.
Fantastic. Right. Okay. We're going to go on a little bit of a journey on the show today. We're going to sort of talk a little bit about the product that you're bringing and where it came from. We're going to talk about user interface design because that's one of your passions. But then equally, we're going to talk about how you've released this product and the process you've gone through because you're also the business and the marketing side of the company. So let's start. Tell us, just in case, I mean, when Fantastical was released, there was huge Twitter sort of applause, and everyone's saying this is wonderful, this is fantastic, and I totally agree. I'm using it every time. But there may be one or two people out there who haven't heard of it, haven't seen it. So, let's tell us what it is, first of all.
Okay, so the real short elevator pitch of Fantastical is it's the first application we feel that makes calendaring fun, easy, and painless. And we designed it to be that way. First and foremost, it has a natural language parsing engine, so you can type things in like interview with Scotty on Thursday at 10 a.m., hit return, boom, you've got an event that's created in the proper attributes. So right there, it removes the barrier of creating events and the stress that it takes to go to iCal, hit new event or click new event or keyboard command to a new event and type in or, you know, pick all of the criteria. Secondly, we have a beautiful menu icon list. It's sort of it looks like a popover basically, that when you click it, you're able to see your calendar and all your upcoming events, and it allows you to manage and view and search on your schedule really easily. And then most importantly, the actual interaction, which is most important, the user experience is really easy and really intuitive. So all of these things together make fantastic how this application that allows you to manage, create, view all of your events on your calendar a lot easier.
Now, I mean, one of the great things, or the fantastic thing, other than it looking good, obviously, because we've got to talk about that in a minute, above it, is that natural language engine you spoke about. And we should be having your partner on, hopefully next week, to talk about all the technology and the issues and with that. So we're going to not only look at this from a design point of view and a marketing point of view, we're going to look at it from a geek point of view. Never has a product been more scrutinized on iDeveloper Live, but there we go.
Definitely. Let me just chime in on one thing, because I am a bit of a developer as well. At least I like to consider myself one. The natural language engine is actually an intelligent learning engine. And one of the differences with our natural language parsing versus other solutions that might be out there is our engine was an engine that accepted input during our trial, you know, alpha and beta test. And it actually learned from people's examples. And we collected data. Our testers were nice enough to let us actually take their samples and take their input. So it's a much different approach. And as you said, my business partner Kent will be on the show hopefully in a week or so. He will definitely speak about this engine, which is really incredible, and that's what makes our natural language parsing so expressive and flexible.
Yeah, it's got. I remember you explaining that to me at WWDC, and I'm thinking, yeah, that explains a lot. That it's, you know, and it could only get better then, really, can't it?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Now, it doesn't learn in a real time basis, so it's not like as you're using it, it'll learn and get better. But we are going to continuously collect samples, see where there's errors. When customers contact us and say, oh, this isn't parsing, the engine will get better and better and better. And right now, as you said, and we get a lot of feedback from our customers, it's very, very flexible. And I think you probably have seen that as you've used it.
Yeah, I mean, that's but actually, I prefer that approach. And we're sort of hopefully not encroaching on next week, but because we'll look at the technology behind it.
Sure.
But often things that learn as I use them, they learn about all the stuff I do wrong as well. And whatever. Whereas when you have something where you can merge things that are coming from everywhere, you can look at common patterns, saying here's a common mistake and make the core better, as opposed to just this sort of set of rules that reacts to me that may or may not be right depending on the day I did it. It sounds a better way of making an engine get better to me.
Exactly. We don't want to, the idea of doing natural learning on a per user basis, there might be days or times or examples or mistypes or stuff that you did that'll just throw it off. So we do want to do it, in a sense, in a vacuum with a large amount of samples. And that's the key. The more samples we get during our alpha test, we kind of held back our release specifically knowing that the engine wasn't ready. And then at a certain point, we knew it was ready and off we went.
Cool. And we're going to spend a load of time talking about the development process of that next week on iDeveloper Live 26. Someone's just said in the chat room, Mark's up next week's IDTV using Fantastical. There we are, a happy user there, Michael.
Very good.
Right. Okay, now, not only does Fantastical work really well, which is the main reason people like it, but it also looks fantastic. And you are part of the user interface design, or the main lead on the user interface design, and this is a subject you're very passionate about. So when you approached a product like this, you know, what were the key things from a user design, interface design perspective that were going through your mind and were important to you?
Exactly. I really want to stress that user interface and user experience to me, I do business and marketing, as you mentioned, and I'm sure we'll touch on that later, but part of my marketing and business development that has made me successful is the fact that the experience of the application is the most important part of the marketing. And if you have an application that looks good, works good, feels good, and is good, then it'll be easily marketable. You don't have to spend so much time convincing people. The proof is in the pudding, as they say. So from Fantastical's point of view, when we started the application, it was very basic, obviously. It was just an input window. And actually, just to give your listeners and the chat room people a little sneak peek, we are working on a blog post that will actually talk about the history of Fantastical and show screenshots and mock-ups and sketches and thoughts and input throughout our creative process and taking it through the release. So I think that'll probably be pretty exciting for people to see. But just to finish up the thought, so yeah, we started with this kind of just simple window. The prototype application was just a text input field, and you go for it and type some stuff in. And then as we progressed, I started to sketch things up in terms of having a calendar and having a list and what functions we would have. But the user experience, the way an application works, the way when you click something or your expectations in a preference window or your visual feedback or audible feedback, all of these things really have to be consistent. And of course, you start with Apple. You start with looking at what does the OS do. Now, as we all know, Apple's inconsistent itself. You can take iCal or Mail or Safari, and there's a lot of inconsistencies. And there are guidelines. There's human interface guidelines, which I know very well. And unfortunately, sometimes you do have to deviate from those guidelines because Apple themselves deviate. But the key is consistency, the type of user experience where everything works the way it should, you know, proper capitalization, proper lowercase when appropriate, having things in the right place, having things intuitive, things, considering things like reading from left to right or top to bottom. All of these things are so very important when you're actually making the interface and the way that the application is going to work.
So, I mean, all the stuff you've listed there is actually quite a lot of detail, you know, inconsistency and checking and making sure this. I mean, where did you start with, you know, in your thinking about, you know, the big picture? I mean, it's a menu bar app on the whole. It sort of drops down. You know, what process did you go through to decide, okay, you know, just what's the big picture about this application? How are we going to approach this in the first place? What sort of process did you go through to make those decisions?
Yeah, so from the beginning, we kind of always felt we were going to be a menu bar application, which of course is very different than most applications. Why would we be a menu bar application? Well, the reason is we never designed Fantastical originally to be a full application that would be on its own. It would be a complementing app to other apps. It would leverage iCal, it would leverage Entourage, it would leverage Outlook, and be something that you would use as, if you will, a tool to interface with. But as we did move forward and start designing it and adding more features and kind of refining it, we realized that it could live on its own. Now, with 1.0, it does require, as I said, iCal or Entourage or Outlook, and we're actually about to release an update, which we're waiting on BusyCal for. BusyCal is currently waiting for approval in the Mac App Store, so once they get approved, we'll release ours. We've been approved, but we're waiting for BusyCal. I guess they're having Apple's – we're not really sure what's going on, but the point is 1.0.2 is ready, and we'll have BusyCal support as well. But we do leverage these other apps, and we work as these as a kind of an enhancer. But we made this decision originally to be an enhancer because we just wanted a better input, finding, retrieval, creation system. But what we realized from our customers, I mean, we kind of realized it ourselves, but our customers are really demanding that Fantastical be its own app, that you no longer need iCal to add your calendars to and set them up. Because for the CalDAV portion, we actually wrote our own CalDAV implementation. If iCal is quit and not open, we will sync via CalDAV. We wrote our own CalDAV implementation, but we use iCal's preferences window to set up the calendar information and the, you know, the account information. So the point is that we always wanted to be this enhancer that would leverage other applications, because why reinvent the wheel? But our customers, and again, we're seeing during our own phase, and this will be something coming in the future, is the ability to use Fantastical on its own, adding your accounts directly, not even having to rely on another application, if that's the kind of workflow that you want.
So your decision was pretty much made before you start, based on what it was you're going to develop. So, okay, you've chosen a menu bar application, status bar app, whatever the current name for them is. Okay, so you've chosen the overall view there. Next, you've got to decide, okay, this is a limited space. It's got to drop down. What are we going to see? How's it going to go? What sort of a process did you go through? Was that a solo process or a whole bunch of people involved processes to make those decisions?
So most of the decisions initially were just made between my business partner, Kent, and myself. We would talk about user interface stuff. I would sketch stuff up or come up with some sort of rough mock-ups in a graphics application or sketching it down, whatever. most of the original decisions were just made between us. So then what we do is we had an alpha test. So you release the build to your testers and you see if they have any feedback. You don't want to necessarily lead them. A lot of testing will say, hey, what do you think of this? Or give us your input on this. And as you know, everyone's got an opinion. So it's one of these things where you have to kind of be careful about leading people on to maybe make them compliment or even complain about something. But at the same time, you do want to get the input. So there were definitely certain elements where we said, hey, what do you think of this? But there were also certain elements that we'd introduce and not say anything. But then we'd get certain feedback like, hey, this is cool. So it was nice to see, you know, you could kind of get the feedback about the features or the changes just by people saying, oh, wow, this works better now. Or I like this a lot better without even telling them what you changed. And I think the best user experience, the best user interfaces are done that way. You don't use gimmicks. You don't come up with things that are different. I'll give you an example of one of the things that I designed that has gotten the best feedback. And the truth to me is that it was the most obvious thing to do. As you know, when you're typing in a sentence, like, again, interview with Scotty on Thursday, you know how the words float down into the calendar area to show you that the words are getting converted into the event?
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that I had said we have to do. And we tried it and it worked and everyone has caught on to it. And for me, it just seemed like an obvious thing. It wasn't a gimmick. We weren't putting words to float or fly down just to do that for the sake of gratuitous animation. It was, hey, you're typing in these words. They're going to be converted into an event. Let's show you that visually. And originally in the prototype, Kent had it where you typed it in and the event would just parse. And okay, you could argue it's a little bit faster. You can argue that no animation, as you type, you get this instant, I mean truly instant event stuff. But it's unclear to the user what happened. When you type in interview with Scotty on Thursday at 10, you then have to kind of say, oh, well, something changed. Oh, that changed. And then figure it out. When you see the words floating down as you type into the proper areas, it instantly conveys this message of this just happened. And yeah. To me, that's the kind of, if that's sort of the essence of what I'm talking about, I hope that kind of wraps it up in the sense of those are the kind of things that you don't want to use gimmicks. You want to use stuff that actually enhances the user experience.
That helps you to know what's just happened. It gives you the confidence that you're using the thing properly and it's taken what you've written in natural language and you can almost sort of follow that conversion and sort of feel confident.
That's right. And not only that, not feel confused. I think it's important more to say that, okay, if the user doesn't feel if the user feels confident, that's a plus. That's great. But the key thing you don't want is the user being confused because A, they probably won't use your app, and B, you haven't done your mission, which is to make people's lives better. The whole point of writing a good application is to help someone and help them actually get more use out of their computer and more time out of their lives and less frustration. So the real goal is always, from my point of view, I always look at it as, how can we make this better and easier? If that ultimately instills confidence and makes it better, that's even a win. That's more of a win.
Excellent. So you said you put this first build out to alpha testers and sort of you got immediate UI feedback. So I have two questions, but we'll do them one at a time just to save confusion. How did you choose alpha testers? Did you make it an open alpha test or did you specifically select certain people? Did they just happen to be friends or did you select a certain type of people because you knew they'd look for what you want to look for? What process did you have to build an alpha test base?
So the initial alpha test base was done with friends and people that I knew and people that Kent knew. We wanted to bring friendlies into it because, first of all, as I mentioned to you, we were capturing people's information. So to say, hey, we're going to have all of your calendar events and don't hold back, right? Because that's the other thing. We don't want it artificial. Don't make up events. Don't come up with stuff. Really use the application. We needed people who also knew us well that would trust us. So it made sense to start with friendlies and start with friends or family and people that we knew. Once that was going on, we realized that we hit a wall in the amount of testing because, you know, friends and family, sure, they'll use the app. But at this point, you have to also remember it didn't have all the features. It was kind of just a user interface panel just to capture sentences. This was very early alpha. So then we ended up taking the test and deciding that we were going to open it up. So then we'd ask people we knew to ask other people. Then eventually we opened it up to where we would ping certain people via whether it was a mailing list, you know, from previous people who had signed up like for cameras or people that we knew. And then eventually just a certain amount of buzz got around. And I don't, you know, from those point of view, some people would contact us via friends saying, hey, you know, I've heard this. Can we get tested? We always kept the test closed. We never did a public test. We did debate doing a public beta test or a public preview where we could gather even more information. But our main thing was the privacy for the events. And we do plan to add, and we're planning on adding it for 1.1, which no time frame at this point, but we do want to add a ability for users to opt in to an improvement program where their sentences will be captured, they will be anonymized, they will be protected, and they will be private, but they'll be able to help us with input and making the engine even better in real time. And yeah, so basically for the alpha test, we never opened it up publicly. We had eventually, you know, tried to get some names. I believe my memory is a little bit rusty right now. I think on Twitter we asked if anyone wanted to test at some point, but this was before our big launch, so I don't think we had that many followers. So right. it wasn't unmanageable. I think now, you know, our Twitter account has really done very well. I think now if we would ask for testers, we'd be inundated. And you don't necessarily want a lot of testers. I'm sure you know this, Scotty. You want good testers.
Yeah. That's why I was really interested in how you got that first set, especially because these are the people who are going to very critically shape the way the product goes forward. At alpha stage, you said yourself, this was about throwing it out there, seeing what happened, making the changes. So this is a group of people that you, firstly, you want to know are on your side, but secondly, you're going to trust that feedback because you're going to make major project decisions based on them.
That's right. And you really need good people because I'd much rather have 5 good beta testers than 5,000, maybe even bad beta testers or alpha testers.
So how much, I mean, you put this initial build out to the alpha testers. How much did what you were doing visually, or I guess just from a usage point of view, change after that initial testing? Did you really basically get confirmation of your approach with some small alterations, or did you sort of come back to the drawing board and say, right, now we've learned this and we're going to totally change the way we do some of these things?
Now, so the answer is not much. I'm not sure if we just had a great idea. So when Kent originally, I'll tell you the little backstory because I think this is important. When we started Flexibits, as I mentioned to you with cameras, it was more of a side project. It wasn't anything that we were planning on, you know, going full time with. And then when we ended up coming up with the idea for Fantastical, at that point, Flexibits became a serious project. I mean, it's our company. It's our full-time job. And when we first came up with the idea for Fantastical, the way it came about was my business partner, Kent, had this idea for, we had this natural language engine, but he didn't necessarily know what to do with it. And I immediately saw calendaring as the solution, as taking this thing and creating calendar events with the output of the parsing. And from there, I just had this idea that this would work. And as we worked with the group, just to directly answer your question, we never really got any feedback in terms of this is bad or this isn't good or I wish I had this. And the testers we had were very good testers. I think the solution we created just resonated well. And, you know, either we came up with a really good solution or the solutions that are out there are pretty bad. And I'd probably argue it's probably a little bit of both, right? Because I do feel that our solution, we did put a lot of time into it. I mean, we had a year of development and a lot of work went into it. But yeah, I think most of it is that people are clamoring for better calendaring solutions. And what we were providing them seemed to just resonate.
Okay, so we finished the alpha test. Or the alpha testing, you've just said you've spent a year on this. I'd be interested to know how many people working in what capacity. You know, what was the next thing, you know, between alpha and beta? Was it just basically heads down and churn, or were you doing lots of small cycles with your test groups still before going for the bigger beta? What process did you use during those months to move the product forward?
Well, we definitely worked full time on this for a year. I wouldn't say we worked, you know, 40-hour weeks. Of course, there were days where we worked 12, 15 hours, and there were days where maybe we took a few days off because that's sort of what you do. That's the whole point of being an indie developer. You write your own schedule, but you don't want to let that schedule go so open that you don't get something shipped. So we definitely worked full-time. The core team for Fantastic Caliber, us two, Kent and myself, and we did have a designer that basically drew the graphics. He provided some UI and UX input as well. But for all intents and purposes, it was the core team of us two. And then we worked with this designer. We worked with the Icon Factory to do the icon. I mean, we definitely had some help from outside sources in terms of some of the design, some of the graphics, things like that. I'm good at laying out and doing the user interface and user experience stuff, but I can't draw for anything. So I kind of needed an artist. We needed an artist and a designer to kind of make it pretty and also help us with some ideas from a graphic art point of view. And we're really, really happy. The artist that we worked with, his name is Raji King. We're really pleased with how the graphics came out and the visuals. You know, Fantastic Hell, to me anyway, looks beautiful. And that was one of the key goals of the app. If it's not beautiful, it's not something you're going to want to necessarily use, and it's just going to look like another boring calendar app.
Okay, now, we haven't done any prep work on this interview, so we've not in any way set up boundaries or anything like that. So I'm saying, Axe, I'm about to ask you a question you may not want to answer, and I'm just telling you, feel free to say, well, actually, I'd rather not go into that. I'm sure you will, but just want to make sure you feel comfortable with that.
What is that? You know,
No, it's not that bad a question.
Now I almost want to answer it, no matter what it is.
But you've just said you're a pair of indies. You've just worked on this for a year. How the heck do you finance a year's worth of development?
Okay, yeah, I can answer that. So the company is just Kent and myself, and we financed it ourselves. What we did Kent's recently out of graduate school, and you know was planning to work and figure out a job. I recently had left a company and we were good savers and we had enough money to get us through about a year or so. And we took that money, which we had is basically an investment in the company, and we were able to just kind of make it work.
So basically, you know, this wasn't a hobby on the side. You invested everything you had in it, basically.
Yeah, no, this certainly wasn't a hobby. This wasn't something that, you know, if it didn't work out, we could probably find jobs. We didn't feel like, if this doesn't work out, you know, we've blown our careers or anything, because we're still, you know, developing our chops, right? We're still doing stuff. We're still in contact with friends and people. And I actually do some advisory work on the side. So I do have sort of a part-time job, I guess. So that was good for me to rely on. And I should also add that we did have, because I don't want to make it clear that this wasn't the only form of income, we are doing one app under contract work for App Shopper. So right, that was a form of income that was coming in while we did this.
Okay, so there was, I mean, do you think that the fact that you'd invested heavily of yourselves in this, it kept you going at points where maybe if this had been just evenings, weekends, where you were trying to do another job, you might have given up?
Well,
I know that's a really hard question.
It is a tough one, because I have to say, I mean, we're blown away and so happy with how well it's turned out. It's still really doing very well on the Mac App Store. People, the emails we get are incredible. I mean, the app is from our point of view, a success. It's definitely blown away what we thought it would do, and we're really glad that it's helping people. But I think for us, the goal and the mission of Flexibits was to have this company where we could make apps, not have to necessarily work with other people, because as you know, no matter how good your plans are, when you have to work with someone else, their plans are different. And Kent and I are very similar in that we see things the same. And I think for us, we're going to do this until it either succeeded or failed. And you know, what does failure mean? I don't know. But the reason why I'm saying I don't know is because we've done well. And you know, maybe our next app won't do well. I can't predict, and I can't be so cocky to think we're going to keep doing well. But for right now, it definitely worked out much better than we anticipated. It's really great that we get to write applications that people seem to love.
Okay, I'm going to draw you back a little bit now, because I've sort of jumped to the opening of the champagne and whatever else a little bit there. And yeah, we want to build up to that at the end. Okay, so you've been churning around. You went into a beta program. Now, was that an open program? Could anybody come into that? Was that private? How did you find people for that? What sort of size, what sort of numbers are we talking about on your beta program?
And you're talking about for the beta Fantastic Hell?
Yeah.
So the beta, this goes back to what I had mentioned earlier. It was always closed. We never had an open beta. It was always closed, but the way that we eventually got names were either through friends or colleagues or contacts. We never opened it up publicly and did a public beta test on a big scale. We got names through other people, and maybe my memory is hazy right now, but I don't believe we ever did like a public call for beta testers.
I can't remember ever seeing one.
Actually, in the chat room, I recognize two of our testers are in here. Maybe even three of our testers. Wow, that's pretty cool. Three of our testers are in here. If any of them want to chime in the chat room, they remember if the beta test, if we ever did a public call or if I just asked them because I knew them. But yeah, I don't – we this is what I was mentioning earlier, but let me just re-clarify. We discussed doing a public preview. We discussed having it open and doing it completely open. But one of the big challenges was, since we were going to capture people's events, we wanted to be very careful about the privacy and the risk and legality, if you will, that comes across with capturing people's info, especially calendar info, right? Someone could create a calendar event that is actually confidential information or who knows what. So we just wanted to be very careful with that. We didn't have the time or really a proper solution to ensure this privacy. So we ended up just keeping it focused. And we ended up having a very big beta list at the end. Let me point this out. Our beta list, if I recall, had like over 100 and something people on it. And they were very active testers. We were getting a ton of feedback because we could see the calendar events that people were creating. We didn't know exactly who they were. That was one thing that was anonymized during the process. But we could, you know, we could get a count on how many things were submitted. So we do know that we had very good testing.
Okay, I mean, you did say about the legal and the privacy issues. That's my fault. I'd only associated that with the alpha, not the beta as well. So I've just asked you a repeat question. Apologies. Okay, so you're getting through this beta program. Obviously, you must be beginning to realize that you've and believe, because you've put this time into it, you know, you've got something here that people are going to really like because of the feedback you're getting back. So now you've got to think about, okay, releasing this thing, selling it. Are we going to, you know, how are we going to do that, advertise it? So what was the sort of production stroke release stroke sales process you began to build up into? Considering, you know, possibly what you've been through before with your product sort of then disappearing because of Snow Leopard. You know, did you have a plan from the beginning, or did you wait till near the end and then start thinking what we're going to do with this?
I did. So the business marketing end of things, I've been doing business marketing and launching successful products for many, many years. When I introduced myself, I didn't really talk much about my background, but just to give you an idea of some of the products I helped launch, I'm sure you've heard of Things by Cultured Code. That was a product that I was responsible for launching. And then prior to Cultured Code, I worked at Ambrosia and helped launch Wiretap Studio, which was another big application. And I've also worked at Apple. So from a marketing and launch point of view, that's sort of the fun part for me, because that's taking something that hopefully is really good. I mean, if you're shipping a product, it better be a good product. That kind of goes without saying. But then you get to tell everyone about it. That's, for me, the exciting part. And the way we did our launch was, as I mentioned, we wanted to do a public beta, but then we decided we couldn't do that. Okay, so that was off the table. So what we did was we did a public tease. And the public tease consisted of a web page showing some of our icon, which I love our icon. And Icon Factory designed that. And we just it's probably my favorite part of the application. It's whimsical. It's exactly what we commissioned. And we showed a portion of that on a teaser page. And we basically gave a tagline. I came up with a tagline that was sort of like, your Max calendar will never be the same again. And that was it. It was enough to whet the appetite to say, as I mentioned earlier, calendaring kind of sucks on the Mac, right? There's really nothing great out there. So, wow, your Max calendar will never be the same again. Here's this cool image. Let's figure it out. And the amount of people who signed up for that teaser, and we made it very clear, because we hate spam as well, you're only going to get one email. You're only going to find out about the launch and nothing more. The amount of people who signed up, Scotty, was insane. I'm not going to divulge the number because it's confidential, but we could not believe the response. So, you know, were we doing something that was resonating with people? Again, was it just calendaring so bad that people are chomping at the bit? Or was this teaser really something that just people like teasers? I don't know fully. I think maybe it's, again, a little bit of both. but the response to the teaser was amazing. And our Twitter account started to grow from that, because we also had a link if you could follow us on Twitter. And here we are now. We have a nice bunch of people interested in our app that we can tell about from day one. And then we had our launch. And
So how did you tell people about the teaser page? Okay, I mean, that's great. You had lots and lots of people sign up on the teaser page, but how did they find it? Was it just that people searching for calendars on Google? Did you you were getting other people to talk about it? What did you use to actually get people to find the teaser in the first place?
I mean, ultimately, I pinged my friends who I know and said, "Hey, here's our teaser page. You know, if you think it's cool, tweet about it." And luckily, a lot of them tweeted about it, so maybe they found it cool, which is great. But most of the buzz that got picked up from it was organic. I think especially in our core Mac community, the people who are really the hardcore Mac people like myself, when we find something that's cool, we tweet about it, or we make sure that people know about it because we want to share the excitement. And all we really did was create this page. I told people about it. Kent told people about it. We tweeted about it from our Flexibits account. I tweeted about it from my own personal Twitter account. And off we went. There wasn't any special thing. But I keep going back to this, and I tell this to a lot of the clients I advise. If you make something really good and something really interesting and something really unique, people will find out about it. The key success, I think, in the marketing I've done is that if the product and the tangible good is good, then the marketing will take off behind it, as long as the marketing obviously isn't obnoxious and ugly as well.
Okay, so here we are. You've been having the great time of developing this great product. You stuck up a teaser page and started launching. You've had a far better response than maybe you were imagining and hoping. And then it's the big day. It goes live. Was it just a case of you turned the website on, you sent everyone an email saying we've launched? Did you do anything special? What was your process there?
So one thing that happened before the launch is we did have some coverage. We had two websites that did a preview of Fantastical. And I don't have the exact amount of time before. I want to say it was a couple weeks before. But Sean Blanc did a – I'm sure are you familiar with his blog. It's a SeanBlanc.net, and also Mac Stories, which is one of my favorite blogs for sure, MacStories.net, they both did a preview on Fantastical. And they had both been beta testers of the application, and they wanted to do previews. And of course, I was like, sure. I had pinged a couple other sites to do previews, and I think for whatever reason, they just weren't interested. Who knows why, what, or where, but those were the two sites that did it. And we definitely got a lot of traction and a lot of buzz from them, because Sean Blanc's site and Mac Stories are very popular sites, and they're sites that I admire a ton. So in knowing that they're such great sites covering my app, that was really great coverage. So how do we do the launch? So there was that preview from those two websites that was part of the launch, if you will. And then what happened was we launched, and on our launch, We had a press release. I did the normal standard, if you will, marketing bit that you're supposed to do. You create a press release, you send it out. You make sure that the appropriate people that are in the media know about it. The Mac Worlds, the Mac Stories, John Gruber, of course. You ping all of these people that you let them know it's out. And the response on launch day was just amazing. Pretty much every site that I visit and every site that I admire covered our app. And, this isn't something that they do because it's a favor. This isn't something that you pay them to do. You put out something good, you put out a clear message, and if it's good enough, they'll pick it up because they'll want to tell their readers about it. And I really feel that the launch day, the product itself helped elevate the success of it. The fact that the product was so good that people wanted to tweet, talk, and share it.
So lots and lots of people will say, oh, well, I always send emails to those guys and they never bother doing anything.
Absolutely.
Or I always do this. But actually, you believe actually the processes that people talk about, send out an email, send out a press release, send it to these different sites. It works if you've got something that's worth working for.
Yeah, and it's funny. I would probably have not said this a year ago because, as I mentioned to you, working with Cultured Code and Ambrosia and other companies, it was always someone else's, right? So until it's your own baby, you can't really necessarily make statements. At least I felt I couldn't make a statement. But now that I've shipped my own app and this is my baby, I think I can say it. I think the people who are emailing and not getting responses, well, maybe there's just nothing to respond on. And it's not a cold comment. It's more of, if you look, I've seen a lot of apps get mentioned, and I know the developer, and they tell me they never even contacted the website. Well, then how did the website find out about it? Because the app was just so cool that they found out about it. And I think if you're going to start somewhere, you better at least have your app being the best it can be. Because if it's not, then your marketing, you can have the best marketing in the world. What does that mean? It just means you're basically trying to deceive someone if the product isn't that good. More time to go into the product than anything else is from my opinion.
So, okay, this brings us to what to me is an interesting point. There is a lot of discussion on this show and its many previous descendants, as I get bored and rename the show, about finding that balance for a 1.0 release, and how lots of people spend far too long trying to get it all perfect, and then they don't release in time. But again, as you've just said, you know, if it's not good, it's not going to go anywhere. So how did you balance that process for yourself? Was it about not having hundreds of features, but the ones we are choosing are great, or there's the minimum features to make us credible? What sort of process did you go through on that to get that balance? So you had a good product on day one, but actually there was a day one.
Yeah, for sure. And I've talked at some conferences where I always put up my typical comment of real artists ship. I'm sure you know that statement well. And the 1.0 ship date, if you will, kept changing. That's how it works. If you're a good developer, I hate to say it this way, but if you're a good developer, it should slip to some point, because you do want to ship at some point. And there's also a saying, you should be embarrassed by what you ship, which means then you shipped it, you know, on time. If you're not embarrassed by what you ship, then you probably took too long to ship it. But for us, the minimum features that had to go into the 1.0 are what were in 1.0. The calendar, the searching, the CalDAV sync, the ability to have a menu bar icon with different attributes, because so many people during the beta test had said that they wanted the menu bar icon to be able to show things like date and weekday or stuff like that. It's really small how it shows it, but people love it. So, you know, we give people what they want. You want to be able to make them functional. The auto alarms, everything that you see in 1.0 is in there. So to answer your question, well, how do you get to that point? Well, you have to come up with a core set of features that you want in the app that will make the app work, that will make the app appealing, that will make the app help people. And that's what we did. And I will say, yes, there definitely were a lot of situations where we would kind of vacillate back and forth between, oh, let's just hold it for this, and let's just hold it for that, and let's just, you know, whatever. But I will tell you that we ultimately did set at – this didn't come until – I have to remember what the date was now, but this didn't come until a certain point. But Apple had announced for WWDC that the Apple Design Awards had a deadline that you needed to be on the Mac App Store for a certain date to be considered for an Apple Design Award. And we felt strongly that we wanted to submit to at least have a shot at the Apple Design Award. So we made that date, I want to say it was April 23rd, March 23rd or April 23rd. I don't even remember the dates now, but whatever it was, we made that date. We got on the Mac App Store before that date, and we hit that deadline. Now, if that deadline didn't exist, I could see that we would have stayed in development maybe a little bit longer, maybe to polish a few bugs or who knows what, right? But it's sort of yet another example, and I always try to instill this in myself, that you want to set a deadline. And at some point, you can't let your deadlines keep slipping, because if you keep letting them slip, then they weren't really deadlines. So, yeah. So I would say that you have to come up with a minimum amount of features, and then at some point, you need to have a deadline, and you can't keep moving that deadline. You have to agree on that deadline. Now, that's easier said than done, but if I keep reiterating it and repeating it, maybe at some point, you know, it'll stay in my front lobe.
I mean, but the point is that there was something that eventually came along that made you said, we've got a ship. For you, it was the ADAs.
Exactly.
For other people, it will be a vacation. For someone else, it will be the wife.
For someone else, it might be bills to pay, right?
Exactly. Unfortunately, you chose a positive reason, not a negative one. So you were in a great position. A couple of other questions, and these are questions where they always get asked, and the answers do become reasonably routine. But I still keep asking them because I am interested by the processes that people go through. Because although many people come to the same answer, they don't always come to it for the same reason. So you chose to require 10.6. On your new app. Was that primarily because you felt the Mac App Store was important to you and that was it? Or would you always have gone that way, do you think, if the Mac App Store hadn't existed? What was your reasoning behind your choice of your minimum OS version?
It's actually a great question because we did at one point during our beta have support for 10.5, and we discussed this in quite deep detail. We ultimately made the decision to go 10.6 or above for two reasons. First of all, the Mac App Store, and second of all, because it made the app better. It allowed us to develop easier, not have to support another platform, give us leverage to APIs that didn't exist on 10.5, allow us to streamline things. There were definitely more benefits than just, it's on the Mac App Store. But the Mac App Store, just to be clear, was definitely on that list of benefits. So yeah, it was. We thought about it. It wasn't a simple decision. We definitely thought about everything, and the decision ultimately came because the APIs on 10.6 and the streamlining that 10.6 or later gave us were just too beneficial to pass up. And then you have the Mac App Store on top of that, so it kind of tilted the scale.
Okay, so next. What process did you go through to make the decision? Because Fantastical is available through the Mac App Store, but you can also buy it off your own website, if I remember correctly.
That's correct.
Was that a long-winded thought process? Did you ever think of going Mac App Store only, or was that actually you always decided that's what you were going to do?
No, we always decided that's what we were going to do. I've actually spoken on this topic at a conference, and for me, yes, there's more work, and you have to maintain two builds, and it adds complexity and all of this, but people still want to buy software directly from the developer. I don't necessarily know why. I mean, I can give you reasons because we've heard from our customers why, but the Mac App Store, so talking about myself as a customer, I think the Mac App Store is amazing. It removes serial numbers. It removes installation. It removes having to enter my information every time because I have an iTunes account. I can go on and on and on, but as a customer, I love the Mac App Store. I think it's the best thing that exists, and I can't say anything bad about it from that point of view. But there are some limitations if you're, let's say, a more flexible power user, like having to log in all the time or potentially have an internet connection to re-download it or license it and so on and so forth. I mean, you can find solutions to everything, but we have customers who want to buy directly from us. And launching our own store was actually very easy because we partner with a company by the name of FastSpring, and they handle all of the store attributes. They actually handle our license generation. They support something called Cocoa FOB, and they actually handle it on their server. They handle the payment processing. They actually have an open source, it's on GitHub, framework that allows you to put in-app licensing in. So from our point of view, to have our own store was a no-brainer. We wanted to have a trial version. So if you're going to have a trial version and then shift that customer back over to the Mac App Store, it doesn't really make sense. FastSpring's base rate is 8.9%. Mac App Store's base rate is 30%. So instantly, if you can capture a sale yourself, you save 21.1%. And if someone's coming to your website to download the demo, well, sure, maybe they want to buy it from the Mac App Store. And if they do, they're free to do that. But I think to just automatically shove them off to the Mac App Store is really taking rid of the marketing and buzz and PR that you've created. So just to kind of answer your question from that point of view, having our own store was definitely an easy decision because our payment provider, FastSpring, made it so easy. And more importantly, we already had the trial and we didn't want to give away sales that we were potentially getting from our own marketing, PR, and buzz. And it's worked out great. Our store sales are still very good. It's not like we're only getting one or two sales a day from our store. We're getting a decent amount of sales. So it's definitely worth the effort. And we get customer feedback that they're glad we have our own store as an option.
I find this really interesting that you know, before the Mac App Store, there was this, especially amongst the indie developers with their first products, especially if they were just launching and they've been doing this as a hobby, weekends, evenings job, this whole idea, well, I can go to a FastSpring, I can go to an eCelerate, I can go to a Kaji. Yeah, but they're going to take 8%, 10%, 12%, whatever the rates were at the time. And if I just do PayPal, it's 3.75%, and that's great. And now we're all sat here saying, wow, 8.9% compared to 30 is fantastic. Let's be using all these people. So in some ways, although the Mac App Store has made those people's life a misery, in some ways, it's made them seem really great value, and maybe customers are coming to them anyway.
It's totally true. It's actually kind of realigned things to make people appreciate a rate like 8.9%. I mean, so I have some friends who are recently using PayPal for their transactions, and they actually switched away from PayPal because even though their fees are so low, there's a lot of really bad things about using PayPal. You know, PayPal can hold your money for no reason. And I don't want to go into this topic, but there's definitely, from our point of view, even before the Mac App Store, because I was using FastSpring when I was at Cultured Code and the Mac App Store didn't exist, their rate of 8.9% is really good for the services they give. But 30% from Apple, it's really high, but there's also the argument, and I will say this. We got featured by Apple. Apple actually featured Fantastical as their app of the week, and it was amazing in terms of the response and our sales and everything, as you can imagine. And from that point of view, getting featured, getting marketing, getting actual promotion from Apple, the 30% was worth it all day long. But not everyone gets that. So from where I'm sitting, I'm happy to give Apple the 30% because they've been a great partner and they've promoted us and they've actually really helped us in terms of getting our getting recognition on the Mac App Store. But on the other hand, not everyone gets that. So you have to decide, but I would recommend to any developer who's making an app, if you're going to have it on the Mac App Store, there's no reason, unless you're really that lazy or stricken for time, to not have your own version, to do a demo version, and then to partner with a company like FastSpring, because that embedded store that they offer, I told you, it's an open source thing on GitHub. It's basically like the Mac App Store. Right from the app, they can simply enter their information and it licenses it and does the registration and everything in the purchase right from within the app.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's all good stuff. Okay. It's interesting that, I think the real test of the Mac App Store is going to come when Lion is released. I mean, obviously, Lion is public knowledge, going to be coming out very soon. The Mac App Store is part of it, is because currently, from my understanding, is, you know, from what I see, the Mac App Store is still quite a geek zone, because it's only for people who really have downloaded, you know, a pretty relatively recent update to 10.6 and then bother to notice the icon in the dock. Whereas with the move to Lion, it's going to be very prominent as part of the way of doing stuff. People are being sold new Macs, are going to be shown in the store. This is how you can buy applications for your Mac and everything. Uh-huh. And so it's going to be interesting to see how the move in a month or two's time to Lion affects the sales through the Mac App Store.
I agree. And I'll tell you this much. I know from the past companies I've worked at what kind of numbers of software you can move that are popular applications. And it's very clear that the Mac App Store right now anyway doesn't have a lot of customers. I'm not saying our numbers are bad by any means, way, shape, or form, but I'm just saying that it's very clear that they need to get the word out. But I've always said this from the beginning. I think Apple intentionally kept the Mac App Store low key to specifically make sure there were no bugs, fix issues, not release something to the public of buying software that potentially fails, and then they never test it again. They never try it again. They never have faith in it again. So I always thought that the launch was a soft launch. With 10.7, as you said, and Lion, you have to use the Mac App Store to buy it, or if you bought a new Mac, like you said, they're going to show you in the store. So now every single Lion user and every Mac customer going forward when Lion finally comes out will know about the Mac App Store. And not only that, experience the Mac App Store. And I expect to see a huge exponential growth on the Mac App Store. And that will be good. There's nothing, I mean, at some point, if the Mac App Store becomes the only source for software on the Mac, that would actually be incredible. I'm glad to offer our own store, and it's good, obviously, we can keep more money. And in a sense, you know, having the Mac App Store become the only source, then yeah, I'm giving 30% on every sale. But if that's where all of the customers are and it's a better experience for them, I'm all for that.
Again, this is a question you may not wish to answer. The chat room are asking, are you prepared to talk about the ratio of sales between the sort of Mac App Store and your own store?
Yeah, I can speak a little bit to it in terms of keeping it somewhat confidential and obfuscated. So when we launched, because of the Mac App Store featuring and promotion, the ratio was just so skewed. I mean, the Mac, it was like 90-10. It was probably more. It might have been 99-1. Who knows? But we had very good sales on our Fast Spring store, but the App Store sales were just huge. But we were being featured. We were being promoted. We were on the charts. We had so much promotion and so much recognition on the Mac App Store, there was just no way that we couldn't. But now that the featuring on the Mac App Store has died down, we're no longer featured, and things are starting to level off, the Mac App Store sales are still higher than FastSpring. And if I had to give a ratio, I would say it's probably about, well, instead of giving a ratio, I'll give percentages. It's probably about 60-40, maybe 70-30. It really depends on the day. Every day we're seeing big fluctuations, and that definitely speaks to the fact that Mac App Store, this is what I was saying earlier, it's very clear that the Mac App Store doesn't have a lot of customers, or, you know, relatively speaking, because you see such huge changes in rankings. You'll see someone, including ourselves, ranked number 16, but then all of a sudden you're ranked at number 5, or you're ranked at 60, and then you bump up to 40. And the rankings change so much because I assume if someone buys 5 copies of our app, there's not that many apps being sold that it ends up throwing us up into a higher ranking. But to answer the question in the chat room, yeah, the ratio of App Store is still high. It does fluctuate, but I don't think the ratio necessarily is important. I think the fact that I would just say the quality of sales we're still getting with FastSpring, it's been consistent and quality enough to keep running it and quality enough to that users want it. So I think that's the more important data point.
Okay, Michael, we're coming towards the end of our hour that we normally make for this show, and I want to make sure you know that you don't go away frustrated from your iDeveloper Live first experience. I mean, if there's tons and tons more to say, we're more than happy to have you back. You've been a fantastic guest. But, you know, is there anything else about this whole developing an app, marketing it, pushing it out that you would just feel if you didn't tell the people out there right now, you would have just failed in your role in life?
I don't know. It's a pretty heavy question, but I'll just say this much. My whole drive is based on doing something good, doing something different, and doing something that helps people, doing something that doesn't make them more frustrated or that doesn't confuse them or cause problems. So from the design of an app, let's even start further back. From a concept to an app, to a design of an app, to an execution of an app, to shipping of an app, marketing the app, and then selling and supporting the app, everything needs to be done with the best quality and the best care and the best thoughts for the customer and the end user. And if you put yourself in the shoes of that end user, as I mentioned earlier, Fantastical was something I wanted, then you're going to probably, more than likely, have success because you're doing something that you care about. And as I see it, passion is the winner for everything.
Here we are. We'll close this section of the show with those fantastic words that people can absorb. Now, Michael, I know we've been talking about the product at really centrally, but just remind people of the website. Remind people if you have a blog where they can follow you, your Twitter account, so that people who have been engaged by what you've been sharing with us today can just make sure they keep up with the things that you're doing.
Sure, thanks. So our website is flexibits.com, which is FlexiBits.com. And when you come to our website, there is a tab at the top for our blog if you want to check it out. If you want to go directly, it's just flexibits.com/blog. And my personal Twitter account is MacGuitar, MacGuitar. And we also have a Flexibits Twitter account, which is just Flexibits. And if you want to download our trial of Fantastical, we do have a 14-day trial. It's fully operational, and you can check it out. And it fully works. There's no restrictions. Or, of course, if you want to buy it, you can either buy it from our site or just do a search on the Mac App Store under Fantastical. And that's about it.
I know I said we'd finish this interview, but I'm going to ask you another question. Because this is one where people choose different things again, and I always like to know their reasoning. Why 14 days for the trial?
So we had a lot of debate about how long the trial should be, and we think that, especially with a calendar app, if you're having events in 2 weeks, you'll be hopefully using your calendar app a lot. If you're not using it a lot in 2 weeks, you're probably not the kind of customer who's going to buy our app anyway. So we originally talked 45 days or 30 days or who knows what, but we definitely didn't want to do 7 days because that's too short. To say to someone, yeah, you only have a week to use it, it's not really right. But we think in 2 weeks, if you're the kind of person that uses a calendar and you're the kind of person that refers to your calendar and you're the kind of person that wants to use a calendar, then within 2 weeks, you should have a pretty good grasp if the product's working for you. And I will also tell you that our trial period is very generous because after the 14 days are over, the calendar still works. The event list still works. You can actually still use the application. You just can't create new events. And actually, when you type the event, you'll still see it parsing. So it kind of teases you to say, you know, hey, you could have this if you buy it. So you still, we don't just shut down the app. We still give you the ability to see your events and kind of browse your events. And if you don't want to buy it and you just want to continue to use it in that mode, then you get to use it for free. We're actually giving you the calendar and the event list. You will be reminded and nagged about it. But ultimately, we think 14 days is enough time for someone who's going to use a calendar or would be a potential customer to really get a good experience. And just so you know, we've had no complaints, luckily, for any sort of time trial period.
I know I said we're finishing, but there's just another question come up in the chat room. Well, a couple of questions actually. When you close the show down, they all wake up.
Yeah, exactly.
it's probably because they're getting excited that they think it's about to end. there's a question around. Did you consider at all using the freemium model or an ad based application at any point, or was that never part of the thinking?
Well, on Mac App Store right now, there's no freemium model. In app purchase will come to Mac App Store and. Actually, the question in the chat room is saying when it does come, so just so you know, he was aware of that. The freemium model probably won't be something we do because I don't think the trial period with an in-app purchase works. Now, you could argue, okay, well, it is a trial. You download a free product, and then you can purchase the functionality. But one of the things, at least on the iPhone, is you can't have an application expire. You can't limit stuff. You can add stuff, but you can't limit stuff. And I think right now the 14-day trial on our site with the ability then to either buy it or not or buy it in-app with our own store is really the best experience. I think maybe limiting features or not necessarily having the user have the full experience from the get-go really limits the potential.
That's good. I think what we'll do is we'll save the other question on the chat room for next week when we're specifically talking about the parser. And if the chat room's quiet, we can back that one up and use it. Nick Burns needs to remember to ask it when he comes in next week.
I'm assuming
he's coming in next week. There we are. No pressure, Nick. Okay. We've already said the goodbye, so a bit of really. So I'm then two more questions. I've really, really genuinely enjoyed this. Conversation, Michael. I love sort of business-based conversations that are based around technical reasoning and technical decisions. I think it's just fascinating the way the two worlds mix and things drive each other. And you very, very eloquently explained the processes you've been through. And I'm sure there's people out there who are feeling a lot better educated and maybe more confident in some of the things they're making because they've listened to you today. So thank you very much.
Yeah, sure. You're welcome. And I'd love to be back on again if there's any more general questions. You know, like today we talked about Fantastical and the stuff of my launch, but maybe chat again about other business marketing or even user interface, user experience stuff. I'd like that.
Right. Consider it a date. We will sort that out. Okay, we're going to say goodbye now. Thank you very much to everybody in the chat room. Considering the new URL for the feed, the streaming feed, and the URL for the brand new chat room went out about 3 minutes before we went live, it's been great that anybody was there at all. It's fantastic. Please send me your feedback on the audio feed experience. We're not doing video at all. We just decided to stream audio because we can get better quality from the piece of string we have here for broadband in the office. So please send me your feedback on whether that was acceptable. We can still up the quality we're streaming at, but we want to keep it to get the best results we can across the bandwidth. Tell us what you think of Convor as a chat room. I mean, it's going to be there. This topic will be there all week to come back and have a look at, or for as long as we develop it. So please give us your feedback. But I'm Scotty. This has been iDeveloper Live. You can follow me at MacDevNet on Twitter. And until next time, you take care. The best of 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 the best of